KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Playwright Justin Karitzkis knows how lucky he is to be enjoying the rollout of his first effort at writing a movie, Luca Guadagnino's spicy tennis romp, Challengers.
When you write a script on spec, you're really just writing it for yourself, and you have no idea who's going to eventually collaborate on it with you. And in the case of this movie, it all came together incredibly fast, to the point that from the time I had finished the first draft of the screenplay to the time we were in pre-production was only a couple months.
Justin Karitzkis talks about how Challengers, starring Zendaya, was inspired by a particular U.S. Open match that turned him into a tennis obsessive. And he shares how he and his wife Celine Song, known for her Oscar-nominated Past Lives, managed to keep their work separate from their relationship. And we ask him about some of his quirkier creative efforts over the years. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, as the world now knows, the appeals court in New York, which is actually the highest court, has overturned the Harvey Weinstein's conviction to the dismay of so many women. His lawyer proclaimed that a great day for America and noted that Harvey had always proclaimed his innocence. Maybe it's just me, but I somehow feel when like dozens of people come forward on you, maybe you're not innocent, but you're a lawyer, you know that this is going to a thing that I feel like is very much at the heart of sexual assault and rape allegations, which is whether you can have witnesses come in to testify to a kind of pattern of behavior that Harvey did this to other people. That was what helped get Bill Cosby convicted. It got Harvey convicted here in Los Angeles and in New York. And the court was split, the appeals court in New York, 4-3. So a one vote margin. But obviously, I think this kind of thinking makes it really hard to get a conviction in a lot of cases. We've seen what's happened to women who have brought forth rape allegations.
Yeah. And let's be clear. The appeals court did not say that Harvey Weinstein is innocent.
Yeah.
The appeals court ordered a new trial specifically because the judge, improperly in the appeals court's view, allowed prior bad acts witnesses to testify as to the pattern of behavior. And the appeals court, just like it did in the Bill Cosby case, ruled that that was improper and that the court needed to curtail the number of witnesses because it was prejudicial to the jury. That is very interesting because we've seen these judges in a post-Me Too environment allow more women to come forward and tell their stories. And essentially, in perhaps the two highest profile criminal cases of the Me Too era, those have now been overturned because of this willingness to let women testify.
Yes. And I saw where Harvey's lawyer said, you can't throw away 100 years of precedent like that. You know, I think we've seen the Supreme Court throw away 50 years of precedent not that long ago.
Well, and it gets to the question of, was that precedent suppressing a lot of testimony that maybe should be allowed in court? And maybe these women should be allowed to tell us the pattern of behavior that this person may or may not have had before the acts are committed. And that gets to a philosophical question about the law, about, you know, circumstantial versus primary evidence, all sorts of things that perhaps now the Supreme Court will eventually weigh in on this.
Well, this Supreme Court, I'm not necessarily in that much of a hurry.
Well, they denied the Bill Cosby appeal. They declined to take that case. So, you know, not that long ago, they were not interested in this, but maybe this new court might be.
Well, yes. And another question is, you know, Harvey is not going to be sprung out of jail and walking the streets again. He was convicted here. And will the California court differ from the New York appeals court? We haven't had that much time since this news came out, but I've heard some people say they think the California Supreme Court will be more progressive than the New York court.
Yeah, perhaps. But again, that could set up a conflict of jurisdiction. And maybe that would be something that the Supreme Court would be interested in. They tend to like to resolve disputes between circuits and between states that have different standards. You know, these state court judges do not have lifetime appointments. So you could make the argument that they have been swayed over the past 7 to 8 years by public opinion on the Me Too issue and have been more lenient in allowing witnesses because of the culture and what's going on in the world. Now, you could argue that that's a good thing, that society is evolving and progressing here, and the judges are simply reacting to what the new standard of appropriateness is. But ultimately, the law is the law. So if the Supreme Court has to weigh in here, they will. But right now, I think we might be headed for a split between California and New York.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing I think is a big, big picture question aside from the law is that, as you know, as a former editor at The Hollywood Reporter and as me as the reporter who did a lot of these stories, a lot of people have been moved out of a lot of jobs and a lot of industries because of the Time's Up movement and the Me Too movement. So does this ruling set back society's reaction? Do we see people now saying, well, you know, I got Me Too'd, but, you know, this whole thing has been so unfair and overdone? I don't know the answer to that question. I certainly hope we don't go backward like that. But I sort of note that this came just as we saw the first of Kevin Sujihara, the former head of Warner Brothers, emerging in a business deal this past week. He's not a straight up Me Too story, but he certainly was caught up in a scandal that involved inappropriate conduct. So I don't know whether we backslide or the courts are now going to be behind where most people, I think, in this society are.
Great question. And, you know, obviously each of these cases is different, but Harvey Weinstein has always been held out as sort of the apex of the Me Too movement. He was the one that everybody in Hollywood knew was a sexual predator. And if his conviction is overturned, then what does it say about some of the others?
Well, some of them never went to court. You know, we've had people that we've done stories about and they're gone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And some of them are in civil court, not criminal. But yes, it's a very significant development in the evolution of the Me Too movement.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we can assess right now the full impact. But a lot of women, of course, are absolutely beside themselves and enraged. And it's, in my opinion, a very sad day for women. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, founding partner of Puck News. The past couple of years have been wild for writer Justin Kuritskis and his wife, Celine Song. Her first film, Past Lives, was just up for 2 Oscars, and Kuritskis' first screenplay made the blacklist and was quickly snatched up by producer Amy Pascal and director Luca Guadagnino. The just-released Challengers, with Zendaya starring alongside Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, is sitting at 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. Kuritskis has written the screenplay for another Guadagnino project, an adaptation of William Burroughs' Queer, starring Daniel Craig. That film is awaiting a distributor. And he's currently set to adapt Don Winslow's City on Fire for Austin Butler. In Challengers, best friend and doubles partners Patrick and Art, played by O'Connor and Feist, respectively, are both swooning over star tennis player Tashi Duncan, played by Zendaya. When they approach, Patrick finds that Tashi may be beautiful, but her words can be biting.
Hitting a ball with a racket is a great way to avoid having a job.
Well, that's also your problem, because you think that tennis is about expressing yourself, doing your thing. That's why you still have that serve.
It works.
Yeah, but you're not a tennis player. But you don't know what tennis is.
What is it?
It's a relationship.
Kuritskis actually wasn't that crazy about tennis until he watched a match that inspired him to try writing a screenplay about it.
I wrote the script on spec towards the end of 2021, and then I gave it to my agent, and we shared it with a few producers, and eventually I decided to work with Amy Pascal and Rachel O'Connor. And then through them, the script eventually got into the hands of Zendaya and Luca. And Luca was somebody who, you know, was always very deep in my mind as somebody who could make this film, because I had been such a fan of his films for so long. And he was somebody who Amy had a relationship with, where they had been trying to find a way to work together for a long time. And so she sent him the script and he responded to it. And that was it.
So Zendaya was first.
I had met Zendaya about the script through Amy before I had met Luca.
It may seem like a sort of a strange question, but were you surprised to come roaring out of the gate like that? You know, you've done plays, but a screenplay is a different thing, obviously. And most people struggle forever. And we had one guest who took him 12 years to get his thing made. And here you are.
It was completely surprising. I mean, you know, when you write a script on spec, you're really just writing it for yourself. And you have no idea who's going to eventually collaborate on it with you, you know, and who's going to join you on this path towards actually making it a movie. So you're really just trying to see the movie on the page because it's a movie you want to see that doesn't exist yet. And you're hoping in doing that, that you'll make other people see it there on the page. And in the case of this movie, it all came together incredibly fast to the point that from the time I had finished the first draft of the screenplay to the time we were in pre-production was only a couple months.
Wow.
Which is completely abnormal.
Yes. Don't try this at home, kids, because it doesn't usually work that way.
It doesn't. No, it's completely crazy. And I feel very, very spoiled by it.
I mean, I hope you had appropriate celebrations for past lives and your film, Challengers.
That's really sweet of you to say. It's been so amazing to watch Past Lives have the life that it has. And, you know, it was just so incredibly gratifying to watch all of that happening for Celine and for the movie. And it's been a wild couple of years.
I understand it's completely coincidence that both movies have this kind of ex-boyfriend, new boyfriend, old boyfriend, or friend in case of Past Lives, that's not an explicitly boyfriend. That's just pure, you didn't say, let's have a contest and both write a movie like about this and see who wins.
No, we didn't have a contest. We're of course aware of the fact that the movies have something in common. I think, you know, structurally and emotionally and cinematically, they're two very, very different films.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's not lost on us, that connection, no.
So I suppose the tedious question I must ask, and everybody probably will ask, is do you actually play tennis?
I played for a bit as a kid and as a teenager, and it was so frustrating for me because I could tell exactly how mediocre I was and that I was never going to get much better. And so I quit. And then I really didn't even watch tennis for most of my life. I wasn't even much of a sports fan. And then I sort of randomly turned on the US Open in 2018 because it happened to be on. And it was the final between Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka. Mm. And there was this really controversial call from the umpire where he said that Serena Williams had received coaching from the sidelines. And she got very upset and said, I didn't do that. I would never do that. And I had never heard of this rule before, but immediately it struck me as intensely cinematic, you know, that you're all alone on your side of the court. And there's this one person in this massive tennis stadium who cares as much about what happens to you as you do, but you can't talk to them. And what if you had to talk about something really important that was beyond tennis, you know, that was personal between the two of you and between the person on the other side of the court? How would you have that conversation? That was really how my connection to tennis started. And parallel to the seed of the movie being planted in my head, I started becoming a legitimate tennis obsessive and was watching everything I could get my hands on and reading every book that was ever written about tennis. And I fell into this deep, deep rabbit hole.
Yes, you did.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's an intense concept. We won't say anything about what happens in the movie, but once people have seen the movie, they will understand what you mean, certainly.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. And I imagine, I mean, you may not know this, but I have to assume that Zendaya, you know, is very much the rising star and they're looking for something great for her to have a really meaty role in. And there you come along with your script at the perfect moment.
Yeah, it did feel like it was, I mean, meant to be. I don't know what's meant to be, but it did feel like a kismet in a sense. You know, I think you never, especially when you're writing a script on spec and it's your first script, you can't write with somebody like Zendaya in mind because there's no reason for you to believe it will ever get to her, you know.
Right.
But once I had finished the script and I was thinking about this character and who could play her, it's really hard to think about anyone who could do it besides Zendaya. So it did feel very natural when we first spoke about the role, that she just understood this person so completely and had this relationship to the character that was already there. You know, it was already sort of in her, which was really thrilling.
And the Luca element, which is so fortuitous if Zendaya was first. I mean, did he read the script and just say, I'm into it? It certainly has the kind of, you know, he has a knack for portraying sexually fraught situations, let's say.
Yeah, well, Luca and I spoke, you know, on the phone after he had read the script, like immediately after he had read the script, because he really responded to it. And a week later, I was on a plane to Milan to go hang out with him. And
oh,
see
what
if
a shame.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, what a bummer. Yeah, and we just spent a week really feeling each other out and seeing if we could vibe and collaborate together and seeing if I could make space within this movie for Luca to find what he needed creatively inside of it, you know, so that it could be his own, so that he could feel like it was a Luca Guadagnino movie. And that was this kind of joyous process between the two of us, where we really clicked immediately and trusted each other immediately because we could tell that we spoke the same language and that we were excited by a lot of the same things in film generally, but when it came to this film specifically. So I just immediately kind of knew that he really loved and cared about these characters as much as I did.
Were there many changes? I mean, you're a first-time filmmaker, as we've noted. It's I don't know how common it is to get to sit with a very established director and make sure you like him.
Well, I mean, yeah, there are many changes that happen in any film when you go from bringing it to something that's really meant to be an exciting and meaningful reading experience, and then all of a sudden you're trying to make it exist in the real world with real people. You know, that's a sort of natural part of the filmmaking process.
Right.
With this film in particular, we had an interesting thing where we didn't really have a traditional development process. We kind of just went right into pre-production. And so we were tailoring the script to the cast that we had and to Luca as we were building a schedule and starting to go on location scouts and all that kind of stuff. You know, we were really doing everything at once. And that was a kind of crazy and condensed process that I think the energy of that actually really benefited the movie that we ended up making.
Sounds kind of bracing. Yeah.
Bracing is a perfect word for it. Yeah, it was.
You were at MGM, I guess Amazon/MGM, but you would be in there in what I call Mike and Pam era, Mike DeLuca
yes.
and Pam Abdi, who are now at Warner Brothers Discovery running their film studio, at least a part of it. But they were the ones who said yes to this. And then they left. But I don't know whether there was a sort of a lag there when Courtney Valenti wasn't there yet in that job. Or did that happen for you where you were sort of in betwixt and between while you were making the movie?
Well, I remember the day when we learned that MGM had been bought by Amazon. That happened like right as we were about to go into production.
Yeah.
I wasn't really a part of the conversations around how that affected us. So I can't really speak to that.
Right.
But I definitely remember the day we were on set wondering what studio right. was making our movie.
The uh-oh moment. Yeah. And then you hear Amazon and you're like, eh. But it turns out they're making movies for real.
Yeah. And no, but we all kind of quickly realized it was all going to be all right. You know, we were all sort of that we could keep going as we had been. And that, at least from my perspective, didn't feel like that much changed.
Coming up after the break, Justin Kuritskis talks about how a goofy video he made in college years ago on his MacBook's photo booth app unexpectedly turned into a viral sensation. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to writer Justin Kariszkis about his first screenplay, now the Luca Guadagnino-directed Challengers, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Long before Challengers, Kariszkis unexpectedly made a splash with something completely different. Let me step back a minute, though. In your career, you were a playwright in New York.
Yes.
Before you did that, you were a sort of successful YouTuber making comedy videos. I saw the one called Potion Seller.
Oh, cool.
It went viral. I think it has like 11 million views.
Potion Seller, enough of these games. I'm going into battle. And I need your strongest potions. My strongest potions will kill you, traveler. You can't handle my strongest potions. You better go to a cellar that sells weaker potions.
How did that happen?
Oh, God. I'm just as confused as you are. How those started was that I was in college and I was working on my senior thesis, which was a play that I ended up performing later in New York. And I would, at night, when I was sort of exhausted from working on this thing, I started just messing around with the photo booth app on my MacBook. And, you know, that's the app that distorts your face.
Right.
And as I was messing around with it, I sort of realized that if you moved your face back and forth, you could create multiple characters depending on the way you were interacting with the distortion. And as a theater person, that felt like it had some relationship to mask work or clown work or, you know, improvisation. And so it really felt like this digital outgrowth of a lot of the stuff that I had been doing in theater. And so I really just started making those to make myself laugh and make my friends laugh. And I was sharing them. I put them on YouTube really just to share them with my friends. And then a year after I had posted Potion Seller, somehow, for some reason, it got posted on some forum. And then all of a sudden it went viral. And then all of a sudden people started watching all the other videos on the channel. And this kind of mini fandom for it began. You know, I say mini because within the context of YouTube, where like there are makeup tutorials that get 200 million views in an hour, my stuff is pretty small change. But I found it really exciting as somebody who was at that point living in New York, working off Broadway as a playwright, that, you know, here I was working really seriously and for a long time on these things that, if I was lucky, a couple hundred or maybe 1,000 people would see.
Right.
And then these things I would make in 5 minutes and put online were being seen by millions of people. And that kind of delighted me.
Sure. I mean, as long as it's not something where, you know, people ride down on you, then it's all good, right? You don't want to...
I like it. Yeah, no, I see it as a thing that makes it very hard for me to ever take myself seriously because there's evidence forever on the internet that I'm a deeply not a serious person.
not to mention your 2016 comedy album called Songs About My Wife. You didn't have a wife at that time, I think, did you?
No, I was married when I made that album. That album is not about my wife. It's
well, I will note that there are cuts on it, including I Slept With a Man and one called Your Blood. So
yes,
it's probably just as well.
Can you say that on KCRW?
I believe that our producers will protect me from myself.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure, good. Yeah. You know, that album was sort of a concept album that I made with a friend of mine who's a very serious music producer. And we had always joked around forever that we should make a pop album together and release it on my YouTube channel and not tell anyone that he was involved. And just make my YouTube fans think that I was this musical savant and sort of see how that went. And that's now like the YouTube videos, it's there for posterity. Yeah.
And you wrote a novel, 2019, called Famous People. You are what you call a man of parts, I suppose, right?
Yeah. I just sort of follow whatever impulse creatively presents itself at the time. You know, the novel started out as a monologue, which I thought maybe I would do on stage, or, you know, have an actor do on stage. And then I got about 60 pages into it and I realized that nothing was happening plot wise, but that I liked the guy who was talking. And so I thought, okay, if this is a play, we're in trouble because this is already 3 hours of stage time. But if this is a book, we're fine. So I just kept writing, and that became a book.
That's amazing. You are definitely a fountain of creativity, clearly. You have a couple of upcoming things, one of which maybe, I don't know what the state of play is, the queer. I think Luca gave you the William Burroughs book, if I'm reading this right.
Yeah. I started writing during production on Challengers. Luca gave me the novel for Queer one day when we were on set and said, read this tonight and let me know if you want to write it for me.
Read it tonight. Just read the whole thing tonight.
Well, it's a short novel. It's only 100 and something pages.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that good, but go on. You certainly had an incentive to keep going.
Yeah. Well, and it is also the kind of novel where once you start reading it, it's very hard to put it down because it's this legendary, you know, brilliant book by a legendary guy. And the prospect of doing that with Luca was so exciting to me. So I read it immediately and said, yes, I want to do it. And I started writing it while we were on set and then really finished it around when we wrapped. And then we pretty quickly were able to put that movie together and we shot it last year. In Rome.
Done and dusted?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any information about the release or anything like that, but the movie is already shot.
This was with Daniel Craig.
Yes, this is Daniel Craig and Drew Starkey, and then a number of other amazing actors, including Jason Schwartzman and Leslie Manville. So I'm really, really excited for people to see that movie.
Wow, you are going great guns. And then I see that you are set to adapt Don Winslow's, what he says is his final book. That's for Austin Butler, City on Fire. I have to say, I just have a sort of a strange feeling that I have some kind of a stake in it because somehow Don Winslow, I don't know him, I've never met him, but we sort of became Twitter friends when Twitter was not what it is now.
Oh,
and
no kidding.
He was sometimes very kind and complimented me on my writing. He sent me all three of the books, including an advance of the latest one. So it's just a funny thing in the internet era, you know, the friend that you've never really met. But where are we on that project?
It's super early on that project. And I haven't met Don yet. I'm going to meet Don. But it's a fantastic book. And there's not much else I can say. But yeah, I'm very excited.
I certainly wish you luck on that one.
Thank you.
And just, I guess, to round the bend here a little bit on the original. So, as you know, in your wife's film, the husband, it's quite, in some senses, autobiographical, although it's not, she doesn't say it's an autobiography. She says it isn't. The husband character, which some people would clearly assume is you, is incredibly understanding. And meanwhile, in your work, you did the wife album with some choice words. So do you guys just accept that you are dealing in totally in fiction? Or do you look at the character in past lives and say, yes, I am a great guy?
No, I think it only does a disservice to the amazing work that Celine and her actor John Magaro did in creating that character. For anybody to confuse it with me. I would hate to have anybody conflate those two things because I think it sort of can only serve to break the spell of that movie for you to all of a sudden have this real guy in your head when you're thinking about that character.
I gotta confess, when I watched it, I thought, wow, her husband must be a great guy. But I mean, sitting
at the
bar.
I'll take that.
Okay. And then your stuff, she doesn't say, why are you thinking this is about your wife when I'm your wife? And you just accept that you're both artists and you do things that are not about each other, even if they're theoretically could be about each other.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the benefits of spending your life with somebody who does the same thing as you, is that you pretty much understand how this all works. And there's not the same kind of confusion you might have with somebody who's not in the arts. So I think we really see our work as our work and our lives as our lives. And we don't really see much overlap between them.
Justin Kuritskis is the writer of Challengers. The film is in theaters now. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Phil Richards and Nick Lamponi, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.